This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, October 14th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ahead on Ozarks, the promise of more opera in Northwest Arkansas. The Chili Pepper Festival brings thousands of runners to Fayetteville. And Emily Cates explains why she'll be performing in her PJs later this month.
But first, Sister Mary Jo Swift is a member of Daughters of Charity, a worldwide community that has made it a priority to raise awareness regarding human trafficking. She travels throughout the United States to advocate for and educate people on this form of modern-day slavery. Yesterday, Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolker talked with her over the phone regarding this unseen problem of human trafficking, its victims, and how these individuals get caught in a vicious web.
Most often they are people who are living in poverty, although that not always the case. They're trying to escape the condition in which they live. For example, one girl was living in the Ukraine, and she wanted a better job, and they said, "We have a good job for you in Italy as a waitress, and you can go there, we'll take you, and you can get a good job." And so she agreed to go, but then they put her into sex slavery. So people, they promise them a better way of life, and then when they get there, they find out that's not the case at all. In some cases here in the United States, for example, the girls are actually abducted, taken in there against their will. In one case, a girl was standing at the bus stop waiting for the bus. Another case, two girls were going to the ice cream parlor, and this car stopped, and they thought the driver was the father of one of their schoolmates. But when they got in the car, they found out that wasn't the case. And so they took them, put them into sex slavery. So there are a number of different ways. Runaways are contacted by traffickers within 48 hours after they leave home. So they're pretty vulnerable.
Do we have any statistics to show how many individuals are trafficked into and out of the United States every year?
Well, yeah, there are different numbers. According to the State Department, they estimate about 18,000 to 20,000 are trafficked into the United States every year. The CIA says it's more like 40,000 to 50,000. It's very difficult to get numbers because it's such a hidden activity, and right now crime syndicates are getting more involved in it. In two studies that were done, one in 2009 and the other in 2010, they showed that there are up to 300,000 American children, usually middle school girls, involved in sex slavery here in the United States. And these are American citizens. These are not usually girls from other countries.
So how does a situation as grave as this one go unnoticed?
Well, I think one of the reasons, like I say, it's just so hidden. They move people from place to place, so they might be in Little Rock one day and Chicago the next day or wherever. So if they get wind that the police are coming after them, then they will move the victims to another place, especially with the sex trafficking. If it's domestic trafficking and it's just they can't go out of the house and nobody knows that they're even there. In some cases, they work on farms, so agricultural slaves. In some cases, they're in factories, and they're locked in and usually don't go out. So it's just very, very difficult to find them and to track down and get numbers. And also, there was one case, for example, where there were slaves in the restaurant in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they were, frightened, but they were threatened. If you try to escape or you say anything to anybody, we will kill your family. And they were from, in that case, they were from a remote village in China, and the traffickers knew where their family was. So they threatened them with death or jail, or they threatened their families. And so they're afraid to try to escape in some cases.
On a rating system developed by Polaris Project, an international nonprofit that works towards countering human trafficking, the state of Arkansas ranks among the 9 states that are really ill-equipped in dealing with this problem effectively.
That's correct.
Obviously, somewhere there is a lack of knowledge and understanding, and our legal system needs to be maybe improved upon, or there need to be additions to deal with this situation?
The two laws that Arkansas, or the two items that Arkansas has, is labor trafficking and sex trafficking. That's in their law. But they don't have anything in terms of, or at least it's not adequate in terms of helping the victims. They don't have anything about forfeiture of funds by the traffickers to give back to the victims. Another thing, in some states they can go to court after the victims have been freed and have a civil lawsuit. Arkansas doesn't have that in their law. It has two things, and there should be 10, according to the Polaris Project, to have a really good law.
When you're dealing with victims and the overall problem of human trafficking, how do you even start addressing the problem, starting with the root cause? What are the steps that can be taken to counter this problem?
My role has been just to inform people about what the problem is. So social service people, law enforcement people actually work with the victims themselves. But they do need a lot of psychological help, often need physical help because they've been physically abused. They need safe houses, and that's one of the big problems that we have in the United States today. There is a safe house in Indianapolis. As far as I know, there are no safe houses in Arkansas. We need more safe houses where these people can go afterwards and get the help that they need.
So for people who want to help, common people like me, what should I do or how can I help?
I think one of the things is to help change the laws, talk to your or write to your senators and representatives. And if you go to the Polaris Project site, that would tell you what needs to be done to improve the laws here in Arkansas. So that would be one thing. And then get, you know, encourage other people to do the same thing. I think another thing, in all of the examples that I have in the talks that I give, is just ordinary people who recognize the signs. For example, somebody went to this restaurant in Albuquerque, and I think I mentioned that. They just saw the waiters and waitresses, and they looked depressed and anxious and like they were supervised all the time, and they called the FBI, and they investigated, and they were slaves. In another case, a man was taking a little boy on a plane, and from the conversation that the man and the boy had as they were buying the ticket, the agent got suspicious, and so gave them the ticket, but then notified the people at the gate and people on the way to check it out. And that little boy was a slave. So, you know, kind of being aware of the signs and not necessarily interfering with the person, but calling the national hotline. Okay, it's 888-3737-888. And telling them the story, and then they will contact the local people. Praying for the victims and praying for the traffickers is really important. Because until there's a change of heart by the traffickers, I don't think it's going to end. And then, like I say, encouraging people to, I think, helping people to be educated about it, educating law enforcement people is really important because they need to know. But sometimes they think girls just want to be prostitutes, and so they arrest them and put them in prison, and they're not there on their own at all. They're not there freely. So those would be some of the things I would recommend.
Sister Mary Jo Swift is a member of Daughters of Charity, a worldwide community that's working toward raising awareness regarding human trafficking. Monday evening, she'll present a program on the topic at St. Scholastica Monastery in Fort Smith at 7 o'clock. For more information regarding the event, call 783-4147. For more information on human trafficking and the National Human Trafficking Hotline number, visit OzarksAtLarge.com.
Earth, sky.
Astronomers say they found the coldest star to date in August 2011, although some would argue it shouldn't be called a star.
The star, WISE 1828 plus 2650, is what's known as a Y-class brown dwarf. Brown dwarfs are sometimes called failed stars. They don't have enough mass to ignite nuclear reactions in their interiors. That process is what makes stars shine.
When a brown dwarf is referred to as Y-class, that just means it's the coolest of the cool. Wise 1828-2650 has a temperature of only 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Of course, we could never stand unprotected on the surface of this star, but if we could, 80 degrees is a nice temperature for shorts and a t-shirt.
Or think of it another way. While we typically think of stars as blazing hot, this star is cooler than the average human body temperature of 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Astronomers reported discovering five other Y-class brown dwarfs. They study these objects to learn more about how stars form, and also to understand the atmospheres of gas giant planets like Jupiter, the largest planet in our solar system. Brown dwarfs and giant planets are very similar objects in many ways.
And that's why some astronomers think WISE 1828 plus 2650 shouldn't be called a star. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This region has several theater companies, a number of music festivals, more than a few symphony and chamber music organizations, and several other arts ensembles. So why not more opera? As Ozarks at Large's Katie Henriksen reports, there could be more opera offered soon.
A new opera company is growing in Northwest Arkansas. Organizers Richard Christ, Mark Osborne, and David Malice are hard at work founding Opera Arkansas, which has the bold mission of bringing world-class opera to Arkansas. This fledgling nonprofit organization plans to raise $200,000 for the staging of Puccini's La Bohème, which they've chosen as their first production. I sat down with Christ, General Director, and Osborne, Artistic Director, at the studio to discuss their mission, why they think Northwest Arkansas should have a first-class opera company, and how they plan to realize that goal.
Well, what we're trying to accomplish is we would like to see world-class singers here, not just regional talent, but people coming from around the world to sing main stage operas, artists that frequent the Metropolitan Opera, San Francisco, Chicago, Teatro alla Scala in Milan. And at the same hand, we want to have them have a rehearsal period for a couple weeks prior to a staging of a show so that we could actually have singing actors. We would like to actually really put them in the drama, as opposed to a lot of shows now where the singer shows up on Thursday night, they have a very informal rehearsal, and then they do the show with seven people who have all done the show but haven't done the show together. And I think that the difference is the real acting and the real intent behind the characters and the drama, which makes it a completely different package and thing to see. We would like to have a main stage professional opera company right here in Fayetteville. We would like to do fully staged shows with sets and costumes, with orchestra, with principal singers that exist in Chicago, New York, Philadelphia. I think that Arkansas is a big state. We should be able to have the same level of music and art as exists in Chicago or in Dallas or in Santa Fe or in San Francisco. And if you go back and look at the history of some of those programs, for example, Santa Fe, they started on a shoestring. Now they're a major event where people go to Santa Fe every summer just to see the opera.
Opera Arkansas hosted its inaugural fundraising gala in August at Savor Restaurant in Fayetteville. It featured an intimate concert from the likes of Leona Mitchell, a spinto or pushed lyric soprano who has sung with all of the three tenors, for four U.S. presidents, as well as for the Metropolitan Opera. Their second benefit takes place tonight in the same location, which is currently transitioning to the new location of Mermaid's Restaurant. The concert will once again feature Mitchell, as well as Mary Jane Johnson, Stephen Mark Brown, David Malice, and Richard Christ, all of whom have performed for internationally acclaimed companies, including the Met, the New York City Opera, and the San Francisco Opera, among many others. The 7:30 performance will give audiences a rare chance to see these performers up close and personal in a space that fits 500, as opposed to a concert hall that seats thousands.
Frequently, you never see this many high-level artists on the same billing or on the same concert. They don't even usually frequent the same opera together, because usually opera, they'll hire one big name, two B names, and it goes on down from there.
In addition to bringing world-class opera to Fayetteville, Crist would like to see Opera Arkansas as a place for nurturing new talent, where up-and-comers can learn from masters of the art.
We also eventually want that use local talent and use young talent and intermingle that with these type of established artists so that the artists that are established can help the young artists that are on the verge of major careers have a better understanding of this craft. And it's a very difficult craft to learn and one that takes a dedication of, as they say, the 110% if that exists.
That fine-honed art may be seen as rarefied by some, one for a specialized audience. But Crist and Osborne argue that the entire community benefits from having world-class opera right in its backyard.
It's a rare art form.
Yeah.
It's one of the most, I mean, why does it benefit our community to go to a wine tasting? Why is it great to go hear a great symphony? Mm-hmm. Why is it good to go see fabulous paintings, you know? We need that in our community. When I lived in New York City in Manhattan, one of my favorite things to do was go to the Guggenheim. Walk through there. Check it out. You know, walk through Times Square. Anything that you can bring to a community that, you know, it's just like the square in Fayetteville. It's absolutely beautiful. They have the farmer's market on certain days. You can get fresh flowers. It's just like I get excited every time somebody opens a new restaurant, you know.
So what Mark's saying, you know, about art, the art form of opera is the synthesis of all art forms. It has singing. It has instrumental music. It has theater in it. It has costumes. It has sets. It has ballet. So if you take your entire, especially if you're doing multimedia on top of that and bringing in film, it's a synthesis of all art forms. So it is something that, of course, yes, lots of people here fly to New York, to Dallas, to San Francisco, to Chicago, to London, to wherever to see the opera. But why not be known in Northwest Arkansas and in the whole state of Arkansas for having that type of opera?
Yeah, it makes it more of a show. And obviously, for example, Mozart. Mozart wrote for every type of music that almost existed at the time. And I think his favorite thing to write was opera.
Tickets for tonight's benefit performance for Opera Arkansas are still available by calling 479-283-1079. Or through the Arkansas Philharmonic website, arkansasphilharmonic.org. A second afternoon performance will also take place at 2 p.m. this Sunday at Aaron Arts Center in Bentonville.
Katie Hendrickson, a new voice on the program, will be covering art stories and more for us on Ozarks at Large, and we welcome her to OAL and KUAF.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday, and we've got new Bobby Rush, J.J. Gray and Mofro, Tedeschi Trucks Band, Chris Cameron. Also from the Cashbox Kings, Broken Arrow Blues Band, Earl and Them, Tracy Nelson, Mike Zito, and a few others. And again, that's every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
It is Friday, the 14th of October, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Bacon Martin. She is the features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You know, I always recommend things to do over the weekend.
That's why we have you.
That's why
you are here.
Just because you adored me.
Well, that's the other reason, yes.
Okay. But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be at Crafts Fairs all weekend, snapping up homemade soap and baskets and funnel cakes.
Godspeed.
I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Kevin Kinder, our music writer, is going to be at the Yonder Mountain String Band's Harvest Music Festival at Mulberry Mountain, listening to bands like Trampled by Turtles, Railroad Earth, and Bella Fleck and the Flecktones. So I don't know what to tell the rest of you to do. I just picked out the wildest, most eclectic choices for tonight, tomorrow, and tomorrow night.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right.
tonight.
Wild and eclectic. Crazy things you'd never think of doing on your own. Here we go.
I think of doing them, but they're wildly eclectic anyway.
Okay.
Tonight at Fayetteville High School, You Can't Take It With You.
A Pulitzer Prize winning play.
Starts at 7 o'clock. Tickets are $7 and $8. If you've never seen a Warren Rosenauer production, well, shame on you.
Yeah, it's worth your time.
It is college-caliber theater mm-hmm. at Fayetteville High School. Also tonight, jazz vocalist Renee Marie.
8 o'clock tonight.
Interesting that she did not start her music career until she was in her 40s, and now she's among jazz's most respected singers and songwriters. Does a lot of unusual new music. Mm-hmm. One show only, in spite of what you've heard before this, at 8 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets start at $25, 443-5600. And also tonight, Memphis-based Rockers Lucero. Tonight at George's, they were supposed to be at the Arkansas Music Pavilion a month or so ago.
Right.
They're at George's tonight at 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. You could conceivably do jazz and then do this.
Sure you could.
And tickets are $20.
All right.
Saturday during the day, I'm going to give you a dinosaur and crime and marching bands.
I know where the dinosaur is.
The dinosaur is at the Bentonville Public Library. And Rexy. Today is Rexy Remembers, an Arkansas History Day with the Children's Museum of Northwest Arkansas and Rexy, who is the half-size replica of a T-Rex. I don't think he makes trout fishing in America T-Rex noises, though.
Wait, he's half-size?
Yeah.
Half actual?
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
So that means he's got to be pretty
big.
Tall. Yeah. Okay.
10 to 2 today, Bentonville Public Library, free. Benton County Crime Stories opens today at the Rogers Historical Museum. This is really different for them. Lots of interactivity. There's a listening station where you can hear crime stories as they were reported in local newspapers.
So they're being read by?
By Kay Cotton.
Ah.
There's a siren lights and 10 code interactive display that introduces radio communications. You know, 10-8, 10-19. And they have the authentic sound of the 1960s Rogers Police Department siren. And there's a chance for you to match wanted posters to the perpetrators, who happen to be the staff of the museum.
I wonder when wanted if you go to the post office now, do they still have those FBI wanted posters up?
I don't think so.
It's hard enough just to get stamps. I don't think you can get
Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
That? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Christina, you're younger than us. Do you remember?
I don't.
Okay.
Actually.
Oh, yeah. There's a family day on Saturday during the day that kicks this whole thing off. Mike Jones from the Sheriff's Department in Benton County is going to talk mm-hmm. at 11 about his experiences in law enforcement. Jessica Hayes will talk about the Marshall's Museum at 1 o'clock. And Michael Lindsay will talk about his book, The Big Hat Law, at 2 o'clock. And there's an Old West shootout by the Sons and Daughters of the Old West around 10:30. It's talking about a case where a U.S. Marshal went to Maysville to collect a bad guy. Hmm. And there was a shootout. All this is free. 621-1154. Or the marching band. Saturday is the War Eagle Classic Marching Band Competition. 15 bands from 4 states, starting at 11:30 and continuing until about 9 o'clock Saturday evening at Gate Stadium at Heritage High School in Rogers.
Now, help me out here. The marching band competitions, those are different than those bands that kind of tour in the summer, right? The show bands?
Not so much, except it's high school band.
But they don't... Okay.
They're showy these days.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Okay, that's good.
My niece is in the Fayetteville High School band, who will be in Springfield or somewhere tomorrow at a competition.
Okay.
But they have great costumes and themed flags, and it's a big
deal.
All
right.
So it costs $3 to $5 to get in. Saturday night, University of Arkansas Juggling Show. Hmm. 7 o'clock at the Verizon Ballroom on campus. It's mm-hmm. free. Mm-hmm. My favorite entry in the wildly eclectic category, the Throwdown in Downtown Number 7.
I know what this is. I got a press release about this.
Featuring the Natural State Connection, Tim Storm and Matt Rivera.
Wait, we got to tell people what this is. Not everybody. Okay.
All right.
Presented by Traditional Championship Wrestling, a local wrestling production, 7 o'clock Saturday at the Fort Smith Event Center, and tickets cost $11 and up.
And according to the press release, You know who's going to be there?
Who?
Someone called the original Doink the Clown.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I'm excited.
All right.
7:30 Saturday night, an owl prowl at Hobbs State Park.
I know someone who did that last year and said it was just entertaining as all heck.
I would love to do that. And somehow it seems appropriate to say, if you can't get to the wrestling show, maybe you can make it to the Ozark Demolition Derby.
Parsons Stadium?
7:30 Saturday night. Tickets start at $7.
Did I fulfill? That is a fun weekend.
Did I fulfill the promise
you
of
did.
Wildly Eclectic?
I think so.
Yes. Thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is features editor for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Weeks ago, the Harleys rode into Northwest Arkansas for Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. Razorback football fans flooded the streets in their red last weekend. And tomorrow, thousands of runners converge on Fayetteville. The 23rd annual Chili Pepper Cross Country Festival will host collegiate, high school, and community races at the University of Arkansas Cross Country Course. Many of the top collegiate and high school programs from around the country will participate, including the current number one men's college team from Oklahoma State. The spectator-friendly event has earned the right to put festival in its title. There's food, in-race results on large message boards, and a high-energy crowd that, at its peak, can be 10 deep along the course. The race's objective, aside from giving runners and non-runners a spirited morning, is to give money to local high school cross-country teams. This week, at a preview event, the schools in Rogers, Springdale, Bentonville, and Fayetteville each received $6,000 for their cross-country programs. Lance Harder, the coach of the number 11 Razorback women's team, says the Chili Pepper has become one of the best-known meets in the country.
Because this festival atmosphere is unique, and a lot of people have tried to duplicate it, but with no success. This is a very unique and special place, and we're real proud to have it in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I mean, the people from Dystad who run all the high school rankings and so on, Mr. Dye and his wife are both here to watch Chili Pepper. They heard so much about it, they wanted to come here and see what it's all about.
Organizers say about 70 men's and women's college teams will be here tomorrow, about 120 junior high and high school teams, and more than 700 people are expected to race the community 10K. Jay Lewis, the race director, says all that participation and the support of more than 50 sponsors enables younger runners to have a chance to fall in love with the sport.
It's all about what we can bring to the bottom line and get to the high schools and help grow the sport and keep it healthy and make it a choice that a young man or woman select for the rest of their life, you know, a healthier life.
President of the Chili Peppers Board of Directors, David Swain, is a walking testimony to the possible benefits of running. A former University of Arkansas runner, he's been involved with the Chili Pepper Cross Country Festival since the beginning.
It's always very easy for me to be involved running. Running has been very, very good to me. It gave me an education, gave me a wife, a whole new life in another country. And so volunteering and spending my time and effort in pushing this event is just the very least I can do to put back to a sport that's been so good.
The festival has become widely known for a variety of reasons, including its unusual and good-natured flair. Each year, a new T-shirt becomes a collectible. This year's edition was created by a runner in last year's men's collegiate race, Aaron Purser from the University of Texas at Arlington. He'll return with UTA this year to compete and pick up the T-shirt with his design. The seeds of the festival were planted in 1988 when Joe Fennell learned, during a run, of course, that a local high school cross-country coach had a budget of just $100. A benefit community race was held soon after, and by 1992, the festival had been born. Though the big event is race day tomorrow, the annual preview event, held a few days earlier, has its own merits. It becomes a chance, smack in the middle of football season, to shed some light on another sport. Coaches from each of the six high schools have an opportunity to talk about their teams.
Team's running well.
Girls, obviously, we're led by Valerie Reyna. This is her senior year, and she's really mentally developed into a...
And as you guys probably know, our number one runner is Aiden Swain. Kind of looks like this guy here. And he's, you know, he's...
Really want to thank the sponsors for all they do and all this money, because we've used every penny of it every year to go places and do some great things. Buy shoes, travel on trips. So we really appreciate it. Our kids really appreciate it also. So thank all you sponsors very much.
Some area high school cross-country coaches at this week's Chili Pepper Preview. It was held at Jose's on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Races begin tomorrow morning at 7:45 with the Open 10K. That's open for anybody. The college, high school, and junior high school races will continue through mid-afternoon. For more information, you can go online to chilipepperfestival.org. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And it's not just cross country in the area this weekend. The Arkansas Razorback volleyball team is home to begin a 5-match homestand. Tonight it's Auburn inside Barnhill Arena. That begins at 7. Georgia will be here Sunday afternoon at 1:30. Head coach Robert Belizzo is with us to discuss this weekend's matches. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. Welcome. Good morning.
It's fall.
It is. It is. We're excited. You know, this is a great time of the year here in Fayetteville. We're excited to start a five-match homestand.
So we're about at the half point of the season. How important is this 5-match homestand?
Yeah, this is kind of our middle stretch right here, and it's certainly very, very important just because it's a home, and you need to take advantage of those home matches, especially when they're in a row like that. It gives you time not only to play in front of your fans, but at the same time just live a little bit more of a normal life for your student athletes to rest and study and all that stuff that is really stressful when you're on the road. So we really need to take advantage of this five-match stretch.
Kelly Stepanovich named the Defensive Player of the Week in the SEC. She seems to be getting better every week.
Yeah, she SEC Defensive Player of the Week. And, you know, I think this is her first weekly honor since she's been here in all 4 years. And I've always thought there's been a bunch of times she's deserved it, and somehow she had not gotten it. So this time around, I told Zach, our SID, I said, if she doesn't get it, we're calling the SEC office, because her numbers were unbelievable. And, you know, she's playing like a senior. She's always led by example. And I'm just really excited that all these good things that are happening to her are coming together her senior year.
I know Kyle asked this every time that you're here, but what should fans watch for tonight at Barnhill?
They need to watch our competitive spirit. You know, they need to see how hard we fight today. Auburn is known for they're just great competitors. You know, they play hard and they talk a little trash and they just go after it. You know, they just get engulfed in competing, and I think it's a great thing. I love it. I love that type of environment, and our players are going to have to be able to respond and out-compete them. I think in terms of skill and physicality, we both have different strength in different positions, so we'll both be able to exploit each other's weaknesses at their different points. The question is who can be competitive and tougher for longer. So I think if fans can kind of keep an eye on that, that will give them an idea.
Most of us who don't play volleyball think of it as sort of a north-south. It's in front mm-hmm. of you and behind of you. How important is peripheral vision, especially if you're on the front?
Yeah, it's very big, especially for our middle blockers and our setter. Our middle blockers, you know, we have three blockers in the front row defending three attackers. But for the outside hitters, mostly, they just usually defend the person in front of them. For the middle blockers, they need to defend three people. So they really need to see three players doing things at once when the ball is in the air live. And that's really hard. So for middles, it's certainly probably the most difficult. And then our setter, she needs to distribute the ball to three, four attackers, and she needs to see what the other blockers – what the blockers are doing on the other side is very similar to a quarterback. Peripheral vision for a quarterback is extremely important to see what develops in the routes and the defense that's coming at you. It's the same thing for a setter.
Tonight at 7, it's Auburn. 1:30 Sunday is Georgia. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week.
Yeah, thank you guys, and go Hogs.
KUAF would like to thank Shirley Sutton of Bentonville. She's contributed in advance of next week's fall fundraiser. Remember, all contributions made before the beginning of the fundraiser that starts next Wednesday will count toward our goal, and will help end the fundraiser in just a few days. Add your name to the growing list of contributors at KUAF.com. Click on Support KUAF. And thank you.
And the latest word from Molly down the other hall is that we are at $34,000?
I believe just over.
So, again, everything we raise between now and Wednesday morning will start us on that goal. We'd like to do it in 3 days, the fundraiser. That's ambitious.
It is.
But
we can do it. The checks have been coming in for the last 2 weeks. Lots of online pledges. Yeah.
All right. And if you didn't receive an envelope in the mail, you can still go online. Is that right?
You can. KUAF.com. It's very easy.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Emily Cates. Emily, how are you?
I am good.
You were planning your own birthday party.
Well, somebody's got to do it. Actually, I've done this before. Not every year, but a lot of times I want to have fun on my birthday. And one of the most fun things for me is performing in some kind of show. And since this is my 60th birthday, I had asked Mike Shirky months ago to reserve a date for me right around my birthday. My actual birthday is October 18th, but we're going to do this show on October 19th. It just works out better for everyone. I asked three Oklahoma songwriters that I like and have done shows with before to join me, and it'll be just a songwriter in the round, a lot of variety, a lot of fun. Susan Herndon from the Tulsa area, Tom Skinner also from Tulsa, and Greg Jacobs from Chakota, all of whom I've crossed paths with for years. I think I met Greg first maybe at the Woody Guthrie Festival years ago. I forget, in fact, when I met all these three, but they're all really good. They don't play in Fayetteville very often. I don't think the three of them have ever played at the same time in Fayetteville. So it'll be fun for me to introduce people to maybe some songwriters they haven't heard, and I'll probably play some bass with a couple of them. Tom Skinner also plays bass, so he and I might trade and accompany other people on bass besides playing guitar.
Any particular reason it was three from Oklahoma?
I had reserved the night with Mike Shirky and planning some kind of fun birthday event. Certainly, there's all kinds of wonderful musicians here in Northwest Arkansas that I've worked with that I could have asked. I got to do a show with these three particular people about a year ago at the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame in Muskogee, and it was just particularly fun, and I thought, wouldn't it be cool to bring them all here on my birthday? So I feel badly for all my musician buddies around here that I didn't ask them. The fact is I just couldn't ask everybody to be part of this thing, and I chose these Oklahoma people. So at least none of the Northwest Arkansas people will get mad that I chose somebody else local over them. They can feel badly that I chose some Okies over them.
Susan Herndon, who you mentioned, she wears her Oklahoma-ness on her sleeve. I mean, she has several songs that she's written that have Oklahoma in the title. Oklahoma Girl, The Bad Roads of Oklahoma.
Well, that's true. Susan, all these folks, I think, probably have songs that mention Oklahoma. And Greg Jacobs, one thing about him, he writes these wonderful songs about the common man, very much in the style of Woody Guthrie, except he's way better a guitar player than Woody Guthrie. No offense to Woody Guthrie. So he's just got some really, really great songs. And Tom Skinner is such a versatile guy. He's one of these really talented people who never toots his own horn. He's written some great songs. He also covers a lot of other songs that other people do. He currently plays bass with a younger guy named Mike McClure who travels around, but he performs around Tulsa also. And for years he's done this thing called the Wednesday Night Science Project in Tulsa, where he's got a whole band, anywhere from about 5 up to about 12 people, and they play at a bar on Wednesday night. And they've changed bars a number of times lately, so I'm not sure where they're doing it now. But he's been a real supporter of other songwriters. And Tom Skinner, years ago, was in Garth Brooks' band before anybody knew who Garth Brooks was, when he was just out of Oklahoma. And Tom, along with, I guess, a couple other guys, went with him to Nashville. But Tom didn't stay there long enough. He had a young son back in Oklahoma, and he didn't really want to move to Nashville. So he came back to Oklahoma shortly before Garth's career really took off. So, he's crossed paths with all kinds of people over the years.
You're Texas born.
No.
No?
No. Kyle.
I've always associated you with Texas because I knew you were in Austin.
I moved to Fayetteville from Austin in 1998. I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia, outside of Washington.
And you've been here 13?
I've been here 13. Well, see, I mean, I'm turning 60. I've been able to do quite a bit in all those years, see. And the fact that I've been writing songs since I was 50, and that's 45 years, and I probably average 4 songs a year. So there's lots of songs that I've written. There's no way I can ever do them all. And there are many good ones that have fallen by the wayside. And I just this morning, in trying to come up with a song I might play on this recorded segment, I came up with a song I hadn't played for many years, but I think it's very appropriate. It's slightly humorous. It kind of – I wrote it about 20 years ago when I was, let's say, 40, and it's – kind of my philosophy of life or my approach to life, and I think it's very apt.
What's the title?
It's called I Don't Know Where I'm Going, But I Know How to Get There. And it was sort of inspired by seeing Mose Allison, who, you know, has a lot of song titles where he kind of connects two phrases with a conjunction, like, I live the life I love, and I love the life I live, or you call it jogging, but I call it running around, or your mind's on vacation, but your mouth's working overtime. So this is, I don't know where I'm going, but I know how to get there. 1, 2, 3. People get down on my case for living day to day. Sometimes even next weekend seems 100 years away. Don't worry about my future, though you may think that I don't care. I don't know where I'm going, but I know how to get there. I might not travel first class, I'm happy traveling third. My destination is unclear, and I am undeterred. My roadmap changes all the time. I keep it right between my ears. I don't know where I'm going, but you know I made it here. You tell me you've got it all arranged, where you'll be in 20 years or so. But can you anticipate the way things change? And what are you living for if you already know? I watch my life unfolding, it keeps me entertained. I used to try and understand it, but that just caused me pain. So now I sit back and relax here in my mental easy chair. I don't know where I'm going, but I know how to get there. I don't know where I'm going, but I know how to get there.
That's great. It's so interesting because you have that lyric in there that says, you tell me you know where you're going to be in 20 years, and you wrote that 20 years ago.
That's true. And I never would have imagined that I would be in Fayetteville, Arkansas, talking to you.
Well, you know what? We haven't told people that this whole thing on Wednesday the 19th has a whole pajamas element.
Okay. Here's the deal. First of all, I don't know if we've mentioned – yes, we have – that it's going to be at Good Folk Productions on Block Street starting at 7 p.m. It for some strange reason, during the time I lived in Austin, it became a tradition for me to do some sort of performance on my birthday and to appear in pajamas or a bathrobe and to get the folks who came to the show to also wear pajamas and bathrobes. And it was just really sort of silly and fun and festive, and people really kind of got into it and enjoyed it. And think about it. I mean, probably your pajamas or bathrobe are among the most comfortable clothes that you own. So it's a way of just sort of, you know, being relaxed and having fun. Well, anyway, so at this show, I'm encouraging folks to come and wear their pajamas and bathrobes by giving them a reduced rate on the cover charge. The cover is going to be $15, but if you wear your pajamas or bathrobes, it will only be $10. So I'm trying to encourage folks. And by the way, absolutely, I do not want anyone to, you know, try to get me presents or anything like that. I just want people to show up. If you want to get me a gift, just show up at the gig and have fun. That will be your present to me. That's really all I want. When you're 60, you don't need stuff. I can't stress this enough.
The older you get, the more you want to give some of that stuff away.
Exactly.
Get some of that.
Yeah.
Do Susan, Tom, or Greg know about the pajamas?
Not yet, but I'm going to tell them really soon. Probably by the time this airs, they will know.
Okay. It's Wednesday night, the 19th, at 7 o'clock.
Right.
It's a school night, but 7 o'clock's in civilized time.
Yeah. Probably go till, you know, maybe 9:30 or something.
Okay.
So.
This will be great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Emily.
You bet.
This is Ozarks at Large, and it's time for a trivia question.
And if you are the person that wins today, you're winning what I think is a weekend's worth of family entertainment.
It's a lot of entertainment.
We have four tickets to tonight's volleyball match with Auburn.
Mm-hmm. At Barnhill.
At Barnhill. You'll pick those up at Will Call at Barnhill. We have four movie passes to Malco Movie Theater, any Malco Movie Theater in the area, so you can see a movie. We also have four tickets to tomorrow's pancake breakfast at the Central Fire Station in Fayetteville. Not that you have to go the way I would, but that means volleyball tonight, pancakes tomorrow.
And then a movie tomorrow afternoon.
And maybe a matinee tomorrow afternoon. Four of them. So you could take you and three other people. That's how it works. All right. Here is today's question. It was on this date in a certain year that the Chicago Cubs defeated the Detroit Tigers 2-0, winning the World Series. The last time the Cubbies won the World Series. Today's question, what was the year when the Cubs last could claim they were World Series champions? Did they last win the World Series in 1905, 1908, or 1945?
I don't know.
Okay. If you know or have a guess, you can call us at 800-522-KUAF. 800-522-KUAF. All correct answers go in the ceramic cow, and then we'll pull a winner for this big ticket package. Good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 14th of October, 2011. It was on this day, 1926, Winnie the Pooh by A.A. Milne was published. He was a writer for the magazine Punch. Many of his first children's poems and stories were printed there and not intended for children, but for adult readers. The first Pooh story was published in the London Evening News Christmas Eve 1925, broadcast on the BBC the next day. Even though A.A. Milne based the Winnie the Pooh stories on his son, Christopher Robin, and his son's stuffed bear, he did not ever read the stories aloud to the boy. He preferred to read his boy the novels of P.G. Woodhouse. The book Winnie the Pooh, which begins, "Here is Edward Bear coming downstairs now, bump, bump, bump on the back of his head behind Christopher Robin. It is, as far as he knows, the only way of coming downstairs, but sometimes he feels that there really is another way if only he could stop bumping for a moment and think of it." It's the birthday of the poet E.E. Cummings, Edward Estlin Cummings, born in Cambridge, Massachusetts, 1894, who, though experimental, modernist poet, when he died in 1962, Cummings was the second most read poet in the country after Robert Frost. E.E. Cummings, who once wrote about his father, "My father is the principal figure of my earliest remembered life. His illimitable love was the axis of my being. He was a New Hampshire man, 6'2", a crack shot, a famous fly fisherman, first-rate sailor, a woodsman who could find his way through forests primeval without a compass, a canoeist who'd still paddle you up to a deer without ruffling the surface of a pond, an ornithologist and taxidermist, an expert photographer, an actor who portrayed Julius Caesar in Sanders Theater, and a painter, both in oils and watercolors, and a plumber, who just for the fun of it installed his own waterworks, and while still at Harvard, a teacher with small use for professors, a preacher who horribly shocked his pew holders by crying, 'The kingdom of heaven is no spiritual roof garden, it's inside you.' And my father had the first telephone in Cambridge, and my father was a servant of the people who fought Boston's biggest and crookedest politician fiercely all day. And my father's voice was so magnificent that he was called on to impersonate God from Beacon Hill." Here's a poem by E.E. Cummings on his birthday, "You Shall Above All Things Be Glad and Young." You shall above all things be glad and young, for if you're young, whatever life you wear, it will become you. And if you are glad, whatever's living will yourself become. Girl boys may nothing more than boy girls need. I can entirely her only love, whose any mystery makes every man's flesh put space on and his mind take off time. That you should ever think, may God forbid, and in his mercy your true lover spare. For that way knowledge lies, the fetal grave called progress, and negation's dead undoom. I'd rather learn from one bird how to sing than teach 10,000 stars how not to dance." A poem by E.E. Cummings, "You Shall Above All Things Be Glad and Young," from 100 Selected Poems, published by Grove Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can follow them on Twitter at Poetry Found, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas, and by the PBS Arts Fall Festival, with Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore tonight at 9, 8 Central on PBS. Written by Betsy Alistair, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And the answer to our question, which was, on this date in what year did the Cubs win their last World Series when they defeated the Detroit Tigers 2-0? It was 1908. Cubs have not won a World Championship since 1908.
103 years.
Yes, as any Cubs fan will tell you. We will call the winner of this great ticket package in just a few minutes.
KUAF is supported by Greenhouse Grill, featuring a seasonal menu of organic, locally grown produce and natural meats, plus an organic beer and wine selection, serving Sunday brunch with live music. They're located at 481 South School in Fayetteville's Mill District. GreenhouseGrill.com for more information.
And Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Bentonville, Fort Smith, Marble. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas.